This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is an OTM Pod Extra. I'm Brooke Gladstone. And that's the sound of the Stonemasons' March of the Pro-Nazi German-American Bund. Founded in 1936 and shuttered in 1939, it had, at its peak, 25,000 members and 70 chapters across the country. While the Nazis were building concentration camps, the Bund held pro-Hitler retreats and summer camps. February 20th marks the 80th anniversary of the Bund's most notorious event, when 20,000 of its members gathered at Madison Square Garden for a, quote, pro-American rally featuring speeches and performances staged in front of a 30-foot-high portrait of George Washington. The rally is the subject of the Oscar-nominated documentary short, or should I say very short, A Night at the Garden, by filmmaker Marshall Curry. Marshall, welcome to OTM.
Thanks so much for having me.
Can we start with the 30-second ad for your documentary? Because it's had a media moment of its own.
Well, it was not exactly what we expected. We decided to put an ad on Sean Hannity's show. And so we
stop there. Why?
Well, we felt like the film was something that people who watch Sean Hannity's show needed to see. The film is about a rally in Madison Square Garden. It is, to me, a cautionary tale about the tactics that demagogues use to whip up Americans against each other. And when I saw the footage for the first time, I was really struck by how similar it seemed to Trump rallies today.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that Donald Trump is a Nazi, but I do think that he uses similar tactics to the ones that we see in the film.
You mean rhetorical tactics?
The film begins with a rally that is full of American flags, and then the leader takes the stage. And he begins by attacking the press. He then goes on to tell the audience they need to take America back from the minorities that are destroying it. A protester runs out on stage and is beaten up while the leader on stage sort of smiles and smirks. And that all felt very familiar to me.
So you wanted to put it on Hannity. And then what happened?
So we edited an ad that is literally just footage from the rally that night, historical footage, and a couple of pull quotes from press reports about the film. And the CEO of Fox News stepped in and personally rejected the ad from airing on Hannity's show.
That would be Suzanne Scott. She personally intervened. And
which was pretty extraordinary. I mean, it was a short documentary ad, a single 30-second buy. And for that to reach the level of the CEO of Fox News was pretty surprising.
What do you think happened? Fox says it just found the imagery too disturbing.
Right. But, of course, 24 hours after they said that was the reason that they killed the ad, reporters began surfacing other examples of Fox News advertisements that included imagery that was at least as disturbing. Dinesh D'Souza's quote-unquote documentary had Nazi imagery that was aired on Fox.
That suggested that the left were Nazis.
That's right.
Yeah.
And there was an ad on Tucker Carlson's show that showed Nazi imagery. So the reason that they were giving was on its face untrue.
So why do you think Fox rejected it?
I think that they thought it was a little close to home. The Washington Post had written a story when we first were placing the ad, and that story connected the dots between what was happening in 1939 and what I think is happening today. And I'm sure that story made its way up the chain of command at Fox News, and they decided that they didn't want their audience to see this moment of history for some reason or other.
CNN and MSNBC are running the ads, right?
That's right. They actually ran it on Monday. So we are just trying to get this story out into the world. This feels to me like a part of our history that people should know about.
How did you come upon it?
I have a friend who was writing a screenplay that takes place in New York in 1939. And we were at dinner and he asked me whether I knew about the rally. And I didn't. And in fact, I didn't even believe him until I got home that night and looked it up and discovered that there had been clips of that night, sort of short 10-second clips that had appeared in other historical documentaries. And I figured if there's 10 seconds of this thing, there's got to be more than that. And so I got an archival researcher who's a friend to start digging around. And he found some in the National Archive and some in UCLA's archive and some in Grinberg Archive and other places. There were fragments that were in all these different places, but nobody had ever pulled it together.
You decided to develop the film even before the 2017 Charlottesville rally, where somebody died when a white supremacist drove into a crowd.
Right. When I saw the footage, it struck me as Trumpian long before we were talking about Nazis again in America. And so I thought that there would be power in sharing this story and hoping that people saw similarities enough that would sharpen their critical skills. And then Charlottesville happened. And when that woman was murdered and suddenly Nazis were in the news, I realized that it wasn't even just a metaphor anymore for Trumpism. There was an element of that world that was actually Nazi. And so I called Laura Poitras and Charlotte Cook, who run Field of Vision, and they jumped in and we finished the film and released it quickly as we could.
The national leader of the Bund, Fritz Kuhn, began his speech at the event by slamming the press with anti-Semitic slurs.
I'm sure I do not come before you tonight as a complete stranger. You all have heard of me through the Jewish-controlled press as a creature with horns, a cloven hoof, and a long tail.
So we know Kuhn's speech at the Bund was a lot longer than the few minutes featured in your film. In fact, WNYC has all 2 hours of it. How did you choose which parts of the event to include?
I wanted to cut the event down to the bone and just show the essence of everything that happened for 2 reasons. One is I didn't feel like we needed to give Fritz Kuhn a long platform. And also, I felt like if the film was short enough, more people would watch it. If we could just get the essence of what was happening that night, it would work just as well as if it were 20 minutes long, but a lot more people would watch a 7-minute film, would share a 7-minute film on Facebook and Twitter, than would watch a 30 or 40-minute film. I was told that this is the shortest Oscar nominee in 50 years.
So you chose things that cut it to the bone, but I assume still resonate with today, particularly?
I wanted the audience to have the experience of being dropped into this rally and not understand what was going on. So when I first thought of the project, my initial instinct was to get some historians and get context and explain to everyone what was happening. And almost on a whim one evening, I decided to edit it as if it were a Verite documentary where there is no narration. And instead, the audience is just dropped into this world to puzzle it out. And there are a number of head fakes that are built into it. You know, the movie's called A Night at the Garden. So you might think it's going to be about a basketball game or a hockey game. And then you see the marquee outside that describes the event as a pro-America rally. So you might think that it's just going to be a typical patriotic event. The film begins with a rally that is full of American flags and the icons of America, a huge 30-foot portrait of George Washington that has swastikas on either side. The crowd comes in and they sing the Star-Spangled Banner and they recite the Pledge of Allegiance.
One nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And you get inside and you see the flags and George Washington. And are those people doing the Nazi salute? And as you start to puzzle through what you're seeing, it pulled the viewer deeper and deeper into the film. So as I was editing, I was just trying to get the pieces that would pull us into the story and provoke a sense of shock and also a sense of reflection about what those events tell us about today.
It also shows us how the emblems of patriotism are so easily appropriated. I mean, even if patriotism means freedom of speech, you can still use the emblems and then excoriate the press. There is one element that didn't make it into your film that was particularly pointed to me, and that was the sense of victimhood that was also appropriated by here the German-American Bund.
I heard sometimes the question, why don't you go back to Germany if you don't like the way we run things here? And I ask, who is we? Is the communists, the Jews, the 100%ers, the socialists, the Democrats, the Republicans, the Methodists or the Baptists, or the acquisitors for the administration? Are not the American citizen of German extraction included in the we's that have a right to run things here?
He basically goes on to say that German Americans are the most persecuted minority. We hear that white people are, that Christians are, and so on.
The other thing that stands out in the clip that you just played is the way that the leader used kind of a nasty humor and sarcasm to tickle his audiences. And the laughter and the jeering that comes from his audiences was also familiar and upsetting. In the background of one of the shots, I noticed a little boy who sort of jumps up and down and rubs his hands excitedly and does a little jig as Isidore Greenbaum is being beaten up and thrown off stage. And so I actually zoomed in on it and reframed it so that the audience would notice that boy. There was something so visceral and upsetting about seeing his glee. And it was a warning about human nature. You know, if we're honest, there is a part of us that is thrilled by being part of a mob. And we need to be aware of that if we want to diffuse that mob mentality that sometimes overtakes politics.
We see Isidore Greenbaum storm the stage. What's his story?
He was a Jewish plumber's assistant from Brooklyn who went down to the rally that night to see what was going on and was so outraged by what he saw on stage that he ran out to try to say something and was grabbed by the, I guess, stormtroopers that were on stage, and they beat him up, rip off his pants and throw him off stage. He was arrested that night for disturbing the peace and fined $25 the next day. In the New York Times reports the next day, they said that the magistrate who was sentencing him said to him, "Don't you realize that someone could have been hurt by what you were doing out on stage?" And Greenbaum said to him, "Don't you realize that someone's going to be hurt from what was being said on that stage?" And of course, this is 1939, so we know what happened in the next few years. He joined the army and participated in World War II. We've been in touch with his grandson, actually, who is understandably very proud of his granddad.
When you were doing your research, you were reading some of the coverage of the event at the time, right?
And it's so interesting to see how contemporary some of that coverage seems. One big debate was whether a group like the Bund should be allowed to have a rally in Madison Square Garden. There were many people who felt that they shouldn't, though leading Jewish groups at the time and many others felt like, yes, these people are anti-Semitic, yes, these people are anti-democratic, but the difference between the United States and fascist Germany is that in the United States, even idiots are allowed to say what they think. And of course, there were other people who said, sure, let them say what they think, but don't give them Madison Square Garden as a forum for it. And of course, that brings instantly to mind debates on college campuses and places like that where we're having this exact same argument 80 years later.
So you essentially stitch together a scene, this much larger event, but there's a history to the German-American Bund before and after. It was a presence in various parts of the country, especially Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and New York. So what happened to the organization after the rally?
Well, they continued for a little while after the rally. Once America entered World War II, though, and German soldiers started killing American soldiers, I think America's tolerance for this kind of ideology disappeared very, very quickly. And Fritz Kuhn, the speaker during the rally, he was arrested for embezzling money and actually had his citizenship stripped from him and was deported to Germany after World War II, where he died.
You were talking about how the tolerance for these kinds of views waned after America joined the war, but let's talk about that tolerance. You had people like Henry Ford and Lindbergh and the notorious Father Coughlin inveighing against the Jews or standing in solidarity with Germany.
My dear friends, we are Christian insofar as we believe in Christ's principle of love your neighbor as yourself. And with that principle, I challenge every Jew in this nation to tell me that he does not believe in it.
You know, this was not a majority point of view in America by any stretch, but it was considered a legitimate point of view. These were the kind of people who probably would have been booked on cable news to offer the other side to the Nazi question if they had been around today. So it was a minority opinion, but it was an opinion that was held by many public leaders, including Henry Ford and Charles Lindbergh. And there was a radio talk show host, Father Coughlin, who would say good things about Hitler and Mussolini, and whose show was carried into the homes of 30 million Americans. We had 20,000 New Yorkers at this rally, but anytime that you have 20,000 people show up for a rally, you know that there are many times that who are supportive of the ideas being espoused there, even though they weren't able to get babysitters that night.
And you think we've largely erased that part of our history?
Well, I think that when World War II happened and we stopped talking about the fact that anyone had ever shared that ideology. But of course, the ideology didn't completely go away. And now I think it is creeping back into the mainstream. The point of the film is not to beat up America or to say, oh, we should feel guilty for these terrible things that we've done. The point of the film is to keep us from being complacent, because we can forget that it's possible for things like this to happen again. If you don't know that any Americans ever supported Nazi ideology, it's easy to assume that there's no threat today. When you see this footage and you see the spell that these kinds of people can cast over a large group of mainstream Americans, the reason that we avoided falling into the trap is because of people's hard work pushing back on those ideas. The first time that I heard Donald Trump's group use the phrase America first, my jaw dropped, because either they don't know the history enough to know how that phrase was used by people who encouraged us to stay out of World War II, or they do know that phrase and are using it as a dog whistle to people who share that ideology. Either of those options is very, very frightening.
Press magnate William Randolph Hearst declared, "Whenever you hear a prominent American called a fascist, you can usually make up your mind that the man is simply a loyal citizen who stands for Americanism."
I think one of the reasons that the Bund did not catch on even more is because of the Germanness of it. When you hear the leader Fritz Kuhn talking, he has a German accent, and there were a lot of German cultural trappings in the Bund. And I think that probably kept many non-Germans from embracing it. But that is part of what frightens me so much about the current super right-wing part of America, is that they don't have those German trappings. They understand American culture very well. They understand how to use memes and the internet and sarcasm, and they do it much more effectively, I think, than the Bund did back in 1939. There's a famous line that I'm paraphrasing, but it is essentially, when fascism comes to America, it won't have a German accent and it won't use swastikas. It will be called Americanism.
Marshall, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Marshall Curry is the director of the documentary short film A Night at the Garden, which you can see at anightatthegarden.com.
Thank you.